With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Despite delayed harvest, California pear growers are optimistic. California Bartlett pear growers say they're seeing a good crop of high-quality fruit, even though a cold spring and late bloom delayed harvest by about 2 weeks. Lake County pear grower Pat Scully, general manager and owner of Findlay-based Scully Packing Company, which packs and ships 35 to 40% of the state's Bartlett crop, says he's pleased by the results he's seen. He said the fruit is sized nicely and harvest looks promising. Harvest is ongoing in the state's two main growing regions, the Sacramento River Delta and Lake and Mendocino counties. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Positive agricultural stories shouldn't go unnoticed or untold. Anna Genasi, Director of Communications and Education at Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, recently went on a California agricultural water tour. She left feeling hopeful for the future of ag and with a desire to share the true stories.
The folks that got here before we did, to have that foresight in creating irrigation districts and canal systems that literally keep us alive today in terms of our water accessibility. It's just amazing. And to meet one-on-one with folks who are working hard in the water world right now, I had more hope leaving that tour than I have in a long time. I mean, there are some really smart, passionate people doing really great things as they prepare for, you know, Sigma and unreliable rainfall and just being really thoughtful about local storage projects. And the whole time, of course, my ag communications brain is thinking, oh my gosh, how do we tell the story better? Like, there are people doing amazing forward thinking things. We got to get out in front of this and tell that story. So Joe Consumer knows that there are people behind that plate of food on your table that are doing really great and innovative things that are sustainable in mind, that are environmentally friendly, that are, you know, looking to keep agriculture here.
And now here's AgNet West Brian Derman with more agriculture news.
Hurricane Hilary delivered wind and rain to many of the state's table grape vineyards, bringing significant challenges and losses. California Table Grape Commission President Kathleen Knave said the storm damage has been devastating for the industry.
We have had storm damage in vineyards through most of the table grape growing region at a time when we are in the midst of harvest. So the estimate is that we will lose 25 million boxes, that 30% of the crop that was out there hanging when the hurricane hit has been lost. And that is very significant to the industry as a whole, to the individual companies, to the rural communities that are supported by the table grape industry, to the farm worker community. It's very, very devastating and unprecedented. This is not something the table grape industry has ever gone through.
Ant management workshops are coming to Ventura and Temecula in the coming weeks. The workshops will focus on the latest research and developments in ant monitoring and management and provide an overview of the benefits of ant control. The workshops will take place at the Ventura County Cooperative Extension Office on September 21st and the Wilson Creek Winery in Temecula on September 27th. Some of the topics that will be highlighted during the workshops include the use of biodegradable hydrogel beads and bait stations for controlling pest ants in citrus, flowering cover crops to promote natural enemy ecosystem services, and cultural control of ants in orchards. Kern County Farm Advisor David Haviland will also be presenting ant management research and applications on the Central Coast and San Joaquin Valley. More information about the workshops is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, the deadline is here. The current farm bill expires at the end of this month, but lawmakers don't seem close to passing a new one. Agricultural trade is one of the important areas affected by the bill. I talked with Brian Keel, Executive Director of Farmers for Free Trade, to get an update on how he thinks things are going.
Well, so the big issue in the farm bill on trade is are the market facilitation and market promotion programs called MAP and FMD. And every year in the past farm bill, in the 2018 farm bill, Congress lays out about $200 million in MAP funding and another chunk in FMD. And that's for promotion of U.S. ag, food and ag products overseas, non-branded products primarily. So, you know, trying to encourage people to buy U.S. soybeans or corn or wheat. The goal of the ag community in the United States for the 2023 Farm Bill is to try to see those numbers doubled. So instead of $200 million a year for market promotion, we'd like to see $400 million. I think there's some skepticism that Congress will go that far, just because the farm bill dollars are always tight, and you know, can you plus it up that much? But that's certainly the goal, and there have been bills introduced in both the House and Senate to try to accomplish that, to double that market promotion funding. I do think we've made progress. As I talk to members on the Hill about the farm bill, pretty quickly people mention MAP and FMD as a priority. So I don't think that means we'll get a doubling, but my gut tells me we'll see those numbers bumped up some. And that would be good. I think anytime we can increase promotion of U.S. food and ag products and expand overseas markets, that's a good thing.
And he explains why those programs are important.
Well, sure. I mean, the way I like to think about trade and food and agriculture, it's pretty simple when you realize 90% of the world's consumers live outside the U.S. So there's no scenario where U.S. food and ag survives just by selling to U.S. citizens. The markets, there's just too many people that we need to reach outside our borders. So the question is, how do we reach them? How do we sell? How do we continue to export? You know, 20% of farm revenue in the U.S. is from exports. And for some industries or some market sectors in some states, it's much, much higher than 20%. So again, we're dependent on exports. We want to export. That's how we have a strong food and ag sector. And there's a limited number of tools in the toolbox. I mean, one is certainly trade and trade agreements. And we encourage the Biden administration, just like we encourage the Trump administration, to try to open new markets. That's part of what the White House always should be working on is trying to get deals with countries that they will buy our food and ag products, because expanding markets expands our opportunities to sell food and ag products. But once you've cracked open a market, once you have a free trade agreement, you still have to do the work of convincing the companies or the buyers in that country to buy your products. And, you know, a lot of times other countries have been there first. You know, maybe with soybeans, it's Brazil is already selling soybeans to a country. Or with beef, maybe it's Australia is already selling beef into a country, into, let's say, Vietnam. So even if we manage to get tariffs lowered and can get our products going into, let's say, Vietnam on an equal footing, we still have work to do to try to convince the Vietnamese to buy our beef, even if it's being sold on an equal footing with Australia, especially if that other country was there first. So that's why MAP and FMD are so important, because they're the promotion dollars that allow us to go in and run ad campaigns and host trade missions and do all the work necessary to convince people to buy our products.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, while agricultural income is expected to be down this year, there are some sectors where that pinch can be felt a bit more than others. And according to a story from Gary Crawford, the dairy sector is feeling the squeeze from lower milk prices and higher feed costs.
The USDA is projecting net cash income this year overall to be down about 26.5% from 2022. That covers the agricultural sector as a whole. But, of course,
there is some variability by commodity sector.
USDA Deputy Chief Economist Cindy Nickerson says dairy is one sector, for example, feeling the income pinch.
And that's due primarily to lower milk prices and cash receipts, with continued elevated feed prices.
USDA is forecasting cash receipts for milk to fall this year by a bit over $12.5 billion, so a cut of over 23%, down to $45 billion, taking net cash income down with it.
And for dairy, if this is realized, it'll be the lowest on record for at least the last 10 years that ERS has been tracking it.
The USDA's dairy margin coverage program is expected to pay producers about $905 million this year. Last year, those payments amounted to only about $127 million. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. In other news, other than here in the U.S., beef markets around the world are seeing softer consumer demand. A Rabobank Quarterly 3 Global Beef Quarterly Report says cattle prices are split into two groups, those in North America and Europe, and those in the rest of the world. Declining supplies and strong consumer demand in the U.S. are driving cattle prices higher, and lower domestic beef supply has also held up prices in Canada and Europe. But it's the opposite in most other regions, where increased supply and lower demand are making prices softer. Rabobank says that U.S. cattle prices have increased almost 30% over the past 12 months, while Australian cattle prices have actually dropped by more than 30%, calling it the largest spread they've seen in the past decade. In a number of regions, particularly in Asia, beef purchases made in anticipation of COVID recovery have not been consumed yet, thus leaving supply chains full. And the American Sheep Industry Association's Board of Directors recently approved the association's budgets and membership rates for fiscal year 2023-2024. Voting was conducted online after preliminary approval of both the World Trust and Fund to budgets by ASI Executive Board at its summer meeting in Idaho. Plus, ASI wants producers to know their 2024 annual convention will be held January 10th through 13th in Denver, Colorado. The theme for this year's event, issues are not always black and white. Now, registration for the annual event is just a few weeks away. It actually will open on October 3rd. So again, if you'd like to learn more about this and other issues the industry is involved with, go to their website, sheepusa.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Taking a look at the projected growth for ag markets. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The Business Research Company's latest look into the growth of agricultural markets shows big jumps ahead. The global agricultural market is projected to reach a substantial size of just over $19.8 billion by 2027, with a robust compound annual growth rate of 9.1%. The global market for genetically modified crops is forecasted to reach $28 billion by 2027, displaying a compound annual growth rate of 5.9%. This growth is attributed to the escalating demand for genetically modified crops, which have traits like insect tolerance and herbicide tolerance. The global organic farming market is projected to expand to nearly $288 billion by 2027, showcasing a compound annual growth rate of 11.3%. That growth is primarily propelled by the environmental benefits derived from organic farming practices. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen. A recent court case involved a contract dispute over the definition of a tractor. What makes matters worse, the case involved a father suing a son. A recent case involved a father suing his son over the sale of a tractor. The father bought a tractor to use in his farming operation, and it was equipped with a cab, three-point hitch, drawbar, and PTO shaft, all of which were detachable. During his high school years, the son used the tractor in tractor pulls, which required the removal of the detachable parts. Dad continued to pay for the fuel for the tractor and kept it insured. Mom and Dad then divorced, and as part of the divorce, Dad discussed selling the tractor to their son. No formal written sale contract was entered into, but Dad told his attorney that he had agreed to sell the tractor to his son for $10,000 with no weights or other items, noting that a bank had a lien on all farm equipment. The son paid $10,000 to his parents, and when he took delivery of the tractor, he also took the drawbar, three-point hitch, and PTO shaft. The legal question was whether the attachments counted as the tractor, entitling the son to them. While the attachments were extraneous to the oral contract, the court said the son reasonably believed that they came with the tractor and were a part of it. It's always a good idea to get contracts in writing, even seemingly simple ones. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen.
After a record high income year in 2022, farmers this year will see profits declining. USDA's out with its new income forecasts, and here's an example.
Net cash farm income is forecast to fall to about $149 billion. That's about a 27% drop from 2022.
USDA economist Carrie Litkowski says that declines due to a number of factors. First, farm prices for most commodities have softened, and so...
We expect cash receipts... Those are the sales of farm commodities to fall in 2023 after being a record high in 2022.
Cash receipts expected to come in about 4.3% lower than last year.
We're also expecting that production expenses or the costs that farmers have to pay for their production inputs is expected to continue to increase.
Now, last year, expenses went up 15%, or about $56 billion. Carrie says for this year,
they're forecast to increase another 7%, or almost $30 billion.
And finally,
government payments, which are direct payments to farmers from farm programs, are expected to fall.
They could fall by as much as 19%.
So all three factors are pushing income down.
Farmers this year also taking on a little more debt and paying higher interest rates on that debt. But even with farm incomes projected down by well over 25%.
We're still looking at a strong farm sector.
That voice belongs to USDA Deputy Chief Economist Cindy Nickerson. She says first, of course, last year was a huge record-breaking income year. It would be hard to top that anyway. But there are other measures of the solvency and health of the farm economy. And in fact...
Farm sector solvency is forecast to improve, and that's despite forecast increases in debt.
And she says if you look at debt compared to the value of farm assets or the value of farm equity,
both debt-to-asset and debt-to-equity ratios are continuing to fall, and what that means is they're improving.
Asset values are growing faster than debt, and as far as the farm bankruptcy rate, that is projected to stay very low, not much different from 2022.
Less than one farm bankruptcy per 10,000 farms.
So despite lower overall farm income this year, Cindy Nickerson says...
It's not all doom and gloom.
Not at all. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
With almond and pistachio harvest in full swing, this could be your last chance to get the navel orange worm control you need. Power up late season NOW control with the exceptional flexibility and performance of Spearlep. Spearlep's unique mode of action provides excellent NOW control, and because there's zero-day PHI and it's MRL exempt, you can safely return to the field within a few hours of spraying. Visit Vestaron.com to find your local sales representative or call your retailer to get more information.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Our nation recently requested a USMCA dispute settlement panel related to Mexico's ban of biotech food products. But what are the next steps in that process?
Now that the U.S. has requested a dispute settlement panel within the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement to resolve issues with Mexico's policy on biotech products such as genetically modified corn, what might the process itself and its timeline look like? U.S. Trade Representative's Office Chief Agricultural Negotiator Doug McCaleb explains.
The process would include actually establishing the panel members, or the judges in this case. Once the panel is established, there will be a period where the participants are able to argue and bring their case and evidence to the USMCA panel. We would anticipate this entire process to wrap up in early 2024, certainly by mid-2024.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Bottom line, grain analysts say lower crop ratings may only provide temporary support in this trade. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report, brought to you by Kloss Equipment and Helena Agri. Make the most of your valuable fertilizer by improving soil quality. Great products like Resurge. Visit HelenaAgri.com to learn more. We see lower corn and soybean ratings already factored in this trade. The trade looking ahead to next Monday in the update when the first corn harvest update will be included. December corn above 495, 497 will be a test in our view. November soybeans have a little more room on the upside, maybe past $14. Kansas City December wheat will stay range-bound through mid-September, it appears, maybe longer. This is the bottom line report. Harvest with confidence using the Kloss Treon Combine, a Class 7 machine with cutting-edge features to maximize your performance. Take a closer look at Kloss.com. Well, talk about range-bound. October live cattle have traded in a 7-week range. Tight numbers are offset by weaker cash demand and a choppy dress beef trade. Average steer weights 5 pounds below the 5-year average. Iowa-Minnesota hog weights are the lowest so far this year. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Farmers are seeing less income from direct government payments. Farmers are seeing another decline in direct government payments. Gary Crawford talks with USDA Deputy Chief Economist Cindy Nickerson in this report.
Net cash income for U.S. farmers last year came in at over $202 billion, far and away a record high. And so,
it's not a surprise to anyone that 2023 may be forecast to come in lower.
USDA Deputy Chief Economist Cindy Nickerson, and yes, USDA is forecasting net cash income this year down by about $53.5 billion, or a decline of about 26.5%. Lots of contributors to the lower number. One of them is another decline in direct government payments to producers. Cindy says with the almost complete phase out of pandemic assistance programs,
government payments are forecast at $12.6 billion. Which is just shy of $3 billion lower than 2022. And if realized, that would be almost a 19% decline in government payments.
And about a 27% decline from 2020, when government farm payments peaked at about $46.5 billion. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Agriculture on guard against cyber attacks. Agriculture has seen increasing online attacks in recent years. Global AgTech says technology makes running daily operations easier and helps increase output. Different types of technology help with efficiency, yield, profitability, and they include computers, robotics, drones, software, and vehicles. One of the reasons agriculture has become an online target is due to the vital role it plays in the country's economy. Farms are also considered easy targets. Many farmers haven't implemented cybersecurity measures and are unaware of the vital role those measures play in the success of their operations. Industry experts recommend farmers implement security measures to protect their businesses. Among some of the recommended best practices, farmers should have a dedicated contingency plan. It's also important to protect all login information. Make sure to put measures in place to protect against phishing attacks. It's also very important to install antivirus software and make sure it stays updated. The National Association of Farm Broadcasters contributed to that report. Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Danielle Leal.
Normally, or for the last 20 years or so, food prices each year have averaged about a 2% inflation rate, but food shoppers last year saw grocery store food prices rising and literally exploding, going up by an average of about 11.5% over what we paid in 2021. But this year, we'd all like me to be able to use the other sound effect, you know, one that would reflect lower prices, but no. Food prices are still expected to be higher than a year ago, but not by anything close to 11.5%.
We don't really expect to be going over 6% in terms of food at home prices.
That's Agriculture Department economist Matt McLaughlin. One of his jobs, track retail food prices and forecast what those prices are going to do. Tricky proposition at best. For a few months this year, it looked like, month by month, that food prices were stabilizing on average, and that caused Matt to reduce his forecast for this year by a little bit. However, this past month, prices shot up again, so for all food averaged together.
We increased our forecast from 4.9% to 5.2%, meaning that we're expecting to go from a little under 5% increases to a little bit over 5% increases.
But that includes away from home foods. Narrowing it down to food we buy at the grocery store, here is his latest food price projection for 2023.
For food at home, we are expecting price increases to be between 4.4% and 6.1%. Right now, year to date, if we were to take just the average prices we have observed through July, we're at 4.8% compared to 2022.
Digging into that a little bit, egg prices are continuing to go down, hooray, but beef has done a turnaround. Prices had been dropping for most of this year, but not anymore.
Our price forecast for beef this year increased from 2.7% to 4.2%, which reflects a 2.4% increase between June and July in beef and veal prices.
The reason for that?
There's a shortage of cattle right now that's driving up cattle prices, and that's being passed along to retail beef prices.
But even with prices going up for many products, again, we're having general food price inflation of about half what it was last year at about 5%. And for next year, look for food prices to go up by how much?
2.1%.
And as we said at the top,
this is closer to what we observe over the last 20 years as an annual percentage price increase. We typically see something on the order of 2 to 3%, sometimes a little lower, sometimes a little higher. For food at home. So 2.1 is about in line with historical norms.
So really not unusual inflation, not really deflation, but what Matt McLaughlin calls
disinflation.
Disinflation. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. We're joined again by Senior Specialist of Industry Communications for the Almond Board, Taylor Hillman. Thanks for taking the time here this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brian, for having me.
And we are talking about some exciting kind of updates on the website. And so let's just kind of get into that as to what it looks like and maybe some of the reasoning behind that.
Yeah, so the Almond Board of California looked at our incentives page that's on our website. And when we first made this page, the idea was, hey, this is an important opportunity to help growers kind of at least get their foot in the door when they're looking at these incentives that are out there. But what happened quickly was, there's so many different organizations and agencies that are offering incentives that the page really was cumbersome. Just a ton of information. It's basically a table with just a bunch of information on it with some links to other people's websites. And it really didn't help growers like we thought it would. Unless someone was going to the webpage intentionally looking for something specific, they just didn't get much out of it. So we wanted to take a redesign and make the webpage more friendly to growers, more useful, make it an actual tool that can help growers start their incentive journey.
And yeah, with all of that information that's compiled, I mean, sounds like the idea is to be a kind of one-stop shop for growers to check in and see where some of these things might be available, and making it a little more simplified seems like that's going to accomplish that a little bit better and make it, you know, more user-friendly so that growers can actually get the information they're looking for.
That's right. The key word there for us is functionality, right? That page really didn't have the functionality that we were looking for. So I really wish that ABC was in a position to be able to just fill this out for growers and get growers this money, but we're not. So the idea here is to make this page as functional as possible to get growers started on the right step when looking at incentives. So when they go to this page now, it looks similar. It's got the similar table format. But the nice thing is that everything is sortable now. So a grower can come to this page. They can select eligibility as a grower, and it filters out the handler, the research, the utility districts, all of the extra stuff that isn't eligible to growers. They could also look at focus area. This was a big one for us. By putting these practice into a focus area, it organized the incentives that are available. So a grower can come here and select one of about 10 different focus areas, things like dust reduction, easements, emissions reductions, groundwater recharge, irrigation systems, soil health, and on. There's about 10 of these. So when you're looking at a focus area, specific area that you want to improve on your orchard, you can come here and look by focus area. You can even look at agency. If you have worked with agencies before, or you hear from your neighbor who replaced a tractor with the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, you can go to these agencies and sort by agency specifically to figure out who's offering what and be able to sort through this mass amount of information to at least get you started in the right area for what you're trying to do.
And you touched on several of the practices there and some of the agencies that might be involved in some of those. But, you know, what are some of these incentives that are available? Since it's such a large amount of things available, what are some of the other things as examples that growers might have heard the name of this particular incentive program, but don't really know where to go? So what are some more examples of that?
Yeah, the nice thing about the webpage is you can choose that focus area and sort by focus area. So if you were to, for instance, select irrigation system in this focus area, the table then sorts it and lists the equipment and practices that are covered in it, which is the nice part of that. So for instance, by selecting irrigation systems, it lists the equipment practices such as smart irrigation systems, variable frequency drives, solar powered systems. So it breaks down the specificity of the equipment and practices in this table. But by doing the focus area, you get all that information in a much cleaner way, and it's not overwhelming to the user.
Very good. And it sounds like just because of making this a little bit more functional, like you noted, this really
ties into the outreach and communications that you guys try to get out to industry members to try and make it a little bit more digestible and, you know, user-friendly so the growers can access this.
That's right. And there's more of a focus from ABC to talk about incentives and communicate that to the industry. Incentive opportunities was identified as a key priority of the ABC Board of Directors. You know, this is a time when more funding is available than ever. Couple that with low price of almonds and the high cost of inputs. We really want to help guide growers through this journey, at least get them pushed into the direction that they need to go to get this money. We've heard from the agencies that they're having a hard time giving away this money. We know that there's some hoops to jump through. We know that there's some things that growers have to do that they may not necessarily be comfortable with at first to get this money, but it's out there and it's available. One of the things we heard too from Garrett Blomoff, who's on our GCC committee, he's with Supreme Almonds down in Kern County. And he said with 3 years of grower returns below costs, more growers will be open to these funding opportunities. And he mentioned it's not just all the classic ones. There's probably a ton of opportunities out there because you got to think as a business as well. Things like employee retention credit or pandemic assistance relief program. So there's a ton of opportunities out there to help the growers' bottom line. And we just hope to be able to get that information to the industry in a much cleaner way. And I will mention too that this webpage, it's a work in production. We're going to be adding stuff. We're going to be putting more stuff on there. There's going to be a ton of stuff that we can do to at least help get the information out there. And the webpage is the best vessel at this point to have an industry member go and find this information.
Thanks, Brian. And stay tuned as we'll hear more of Brian and Taylor's conversation after the short break.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination,
our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the show. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with part two of his conversation with the Farm Board of California.
Again, talking to Taylor Hillman this morning, Senior Specialist of Industry Communications for the Almond Board of California. And now, Taylor, with ABC prioritizing outreach efforts to help growers with different incentive programs, was that part of the thought process behind the incentive zone that was put together at last year's Almond Conference? And is that maybe going to be happening again this year?
I'm glad you mentioned that, Brian. Yes, that's one of the reasons we did that last year was the incentive and grower support zone, which had some of the agencies there talking about incentives. And even NRCS had an almond-specific one-pager that they brought that showed just all the stuff that a specific almond grower could take advantage of if they went through the program and got some of those incentive funds. This year, we hope to make that bigger and better than ever. We're moving it out front. It's going to be out by the main ballroom where the state of the industry is. We're going to increase the number of tables. We're going to make sure that all of those tables offer incentives. We just really hope that this is as beneficial as possible. Some of the groups that are going to be there is the Air Resources Board, CDFA, who offers SWEEP, Healthy Soils, the Specialty Crop Block Grants. Those block grants are now going to be issued out to other groups to be able to disperse some of that funding too, so they'll be able to explain that process. SWEEP is opening up in November, so at our conference, they could be taking applications right there. I mean, there's just a lot of opportunities here, and we hope that this incentive zone will be well worth it. And with some of the interaction we saw last year with growers going back to that area, we really hope by moving it out front, increasing the visibility and putting some more vendors there to be able to show growers what is all possible. I mean, it's a no-brainer when you're looking at these things and moving forward.
Well, very good. And since there is a kind of revamp on the website, want to give an opportunity to guide people to that website and also where they can get signed up to attend and check out the incentive zone at this year's Almond Conference.
Yeah, so the incentive page is super easy. Almonds.com/incentives. Almonds.com/incentives. That'll get you right to the page. It's also under the grower tools section at the top menu bar. And yeah, the conference, of course, the Almond Conference. We'll be hearing more of that as we get closer to it. That is December 5th through 7th in Sacramento again. You can find out all the information about the conference at almonds.com/conference. And the grower breakfast this year is going to be on Wednesday, that main day that we know that most growers try to attend. Our ABC incentive lead, Jesse Roseman, will be in charge of the grower breakfast this year. And there will be about an hour's worth of information from people that can help growers with incentives, TSPs, equipment companies that help growers fill out applications, and others up there that will be able to give some information to growers on how to get started, what you need to get started. And then after the grower breakfast is concluded, basically the growers can walk out to the incentive zone and talk to these organizations. So it should be a great opportunity. If you've ever thought about incentives and maybe we're a little overwhelmed or timid, this is a great opportunity to find out some more information and then go ask the people in charge of the incentives right there. It's a one-stop shop for growers, and we think it'll be a great opportunity.
Sounds like it should be a good opportunity for growers to check out. ABC Senior Specialist of Industry Communications, Taylor Hillman, joins us again this morning. Taylor, thanks again for your time.
Absolutely. And again, almonds.com/incentives and almonds.com/conference. Thanks, Brian.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.